The Secrets of Stargate is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, Episode 150.
General West, Jackson has identified the seventh symbol.
All right, here we go. We are about to try to make a connection.
All we gotta do is bust out of here, commandeer the ship, and fly on home.
Indeed. You say that a lot.
I know that this could be dangerous. But this is our job, right? It's what we signed on to do.
It was never about going home. It's about getting us to where we're going.
Hi, I'm Jack Barrazzini, and you're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, where we talk about the hidden meanings and deeper layers found in the Stargate movies, TV series, and more. And joining me today are Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father.
Howdy, Jack.
And Lisa Jones. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jack.
And Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hey, Jack. I hope you're having a blue Monday.
It's Thursday, but it feels like a Monday. So.
Yeah. Just tying into our New Order title here.
Yep.
Oh, nice. Today we are discussing the first episodes of season 8, New Order, parts 1 and 2. With Colonel O'Neill still frozen in the ancient stasis pod, Carter and Teal desperately seek out the Asgard for help, but find their allies locked in a destructive battle against the relentless replicators. Meanwhile, back on Earth, the system lords arrive seeking an alliance to counter the threat of Baal, who has claimed Anubis's territory. However, their fragile coalition poses its own danger. SG-1 finds itself caught between two escalating threats, the relentless replicators determined to overrun the Asgard and the power-hungry system lords vying for galactic domination. What were your thoughts on this episode, Father?
You know, this wasn't a bad episode, but it did kind of feel like, okay, we got some loose threads from season 7 we got to tie up real quick. Let's get them done. Of course, we got to set up for Atlantis. And yeah, that's about it. Then we want to bring the replicators back, so let's bring them back. So it wasn't a bad episode, but it really did kind of feel like we're just going to throw a bunch of stuff together and get the season going.
I wonder if it was because they weren't going to get canceled, so they could now bring all the stuff back that they kind of just let fall by the wayside.
Yep.
What about you, Lisa?
So this aired as one episode. These two aired as one episode originally. And so I liked it. It was a little off-putting to have a new Dr. Weir to start and no Jack for the first half. But you think about it, they had the Asgard, they had the replicators, they had the Gould System Lords ball, they referenced Anubis. We did have some of the team together for at least some of it. They referenced General Hammond. I liked it. It started a new season. I do, in a way, like Father Corey said, they're kind of throwing in the kitchen sink. But I think that it worked because Atlantis was getting such a lot of promotion at the time. And so you might have had new people. And so this was a good time to kind of get them all caught up to speed. Oh, yeah, there's a cliffhanger. How are we going to solve it? And they take care of a lot in this hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Victor?
Yeah, I really like it. You know, it's got everything that I like about Stargate. It has, you know, the Ghoul, the replicators, the Asgard, and it becomes clear that they were basically, you know, launching the new season and saying, look, we still have all these plot threads out there we can explore, you know, where there's still lots going on in SG-1. You know, we've got replicators and we got Asgard, and of course the Gould System Lords and Baal, don't forget about them. So, and they spent their effects budget for, I think, the next two or three episodes on this one, too. But they were really throwing everything at this episode, like they do with most season openers. They like to start with a bang to get people back. And yeah, so it's always great to see Thor. It's always great to see you. And
it's great to see you, too.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, and there were some good performative, good guest stars in this one, too. So I like it.
It was very jarring having a completely different Elizabeth Weir right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like, and she doesn't seem like the same kind of character. And I guess it's one of those things where she was previously only in the last two episodes, but they're just portrayed so differently. Like, Higginson, who is the weird going forward. She seems much more like, I don't know if austere is the word or flat. Maybe it's just her getting into the role, but very different from the previous actress.
They did mention on the commentary that Tori Higginson was very intimidated, and her first day of shooting was pretty much all of her monologues, you know, to the SG team, to the Gould. And so she hadn't really found her character yet. And they give her like, you know, 17 or 20 pages of dialogue, you know, to read on her first day of shooting. So it was, you know, it's stepping into to a role that was just so recently vacated by another actor, I think has to be also pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
But she she owns it by the end of this episode and definitely going into Atlantis.
Yeah. And you'll forget. I mean, I hate to say that about the previous actress, but you'll kind of forget that she was in those two episodes, and Tori Higginson just becomes Dr. Weir.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's, you're replacing the actor early on, so it's not really a continuity issue or a character issue, because Jessica Steen, she was really good in the episode she was in, but it wasn't like she was there for multiple seasons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I like that they started it right away with her. It's like, just get it over with, rip the Band-Aid off. Hey, here she is.
Yeah.
Different actress. Okay, we're done. All right, let's move forward.
Yep. And I think I read that if they hadn't had to do the lead into Atlantis, they would have had Woolsey running the SGC at first before the promotion scene at the end. Yeah. But, you know, given that they needed the Atlantis lead in, they had Weir stick around.
And based on knowing that this was kind of like the setup for Atlantis, I was expecting we'd actually see Atlantis, but we haven't yet. So
we get a whole movie to do that.
Yep.
Yep. We'll talk about that next week.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, this and really, like I said, this was kind of tying up loose ends, you know, what's going on with Jack, you know, getting the Ancients repository out of Jack's head again, you know, unfreezing him and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, like at the very end, oh, by the way, now we can go and explore the Antarctica base.
Yeah.
It was literally like the last line. I'm going, you know, and that was it.
Yeah. Oh, and the other big thing that happened in the opening scenes, Teal'c has hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Only and nobody tried to bring says it up twice anything about and it.
Yeah. Well, he can try. They say, "Well, what's with the hair?"
Yeah. Until
and then he can't finish twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kids, what I want to know is, I mean, obviously, real world reasons are there's a long time between filming episodes, but I assume this is like the next day. Or maybe like a week. Like it, I don't think there's been a long amount of time between.
I thought it was more like a month or so. I mean, we're not talking because they're talking about they're in the middle of having treaties, you know, discussions and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so this isn't something that's going to be quick, as far as I understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had read that Christopher Judge was really just tired of shaving his head.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, eight years of it or 7 years of it, that was one of the, like, a concession that he could stop shaving his head.
Admittedly, I did have to go back on Wiki and look at a screenshot of him from season 7. Wait, he did have hair last season, right?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, because you expected them to say it right away, right?
Yeah. Wait. Yeah.
Well, it's like when he had his little, like, you know, groove patch or something at the beginning of season 4 that didn't last very long either. But what is funny is because, you know, they film these things out of sequence, you do get to see Christopher Judge's hair, like, get shorter and then longer while he's riding on the cargo vessel.
Maybe he's trimming it up. He's trying to find the perfect length.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and so I do like at the beginning, I forget what the line is necessarily, but they're talking to Weir, and she says something like, "No, I would never say that," while she's nodding. And then there's a callback to that when Sam's kind of, you know, pressuring her to get the cargo vessel, because the plan is that they'll go to the old Asgard homeworld where they trapped the replicators in the time dilation field. And if they hang out there long enough, the Asgard, you know, presumably are monitoring the situation and will show up, because the Asgard have not been responding to anybody's messages.
because lately. The Asgard decided to just blow up their homeworld along with their sun.
Yeah.
Implode their sun would be probably a better way to put it with a black hole, but
right.
Increase the gravity till it collapses. Yeah.
Seems like a tool that could be used more often, but
mm-hmm. Carter seemed very interested in that.
Yes.
Right? Like, oh, yeah. Teach
well, she's
me.
Blown one up. So yeah, that's the next step. Turn one into a black hole. I mean, come on.
I'll go back to that red sky planet and I'll show them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's I'm glad we get to see Thor again.
Yeah.
So he's always fun, and I feel like the animatronics are always really good.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a couple of scenes where it's actually just it's a CGI as well, you know, where he's actually walking free instead of just being behind this podium.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But the visual effects people, according to the commentary, had one stipulation that was like, don't make us show his feet. Because it's that whole thing where, you know, feet, computer animated feet interacting with the floor is like impossible to do. And especially, you know, in
to make it look really, really good that it looks good, that you're not floating or in the ground a little bit or something. Yeah.
I did love the conversation between Carter and Teal'c on the cargo ship.
Oh, yeah.
How are you doing? Fine.
Fine.
Have you kept in touch with Ishta? Yes.
No, he said indeed on that
indeed,
one.
Indeed, indeed. That's right.
And then he turns it around. He's like, how's Pete Shanahan? And she's like, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll make you a sandwich.
Yeah.
Plying him with turkey.
Yeah. I loved it because I thought she's sitting there going, oh, have I been ignoring you? And he's probably like, I'm good. Like you,
yeah. You go back and do your geek thing. We'll be fine.
Well, he's just sitting in there with that red ball in his hands, like you know,
it's a stress ball.
Yeah.
I was picturing the two of them 10 days in that ship together.
Could have given us a montage of them like playing chess or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or him just sitting there and her like bouncing around, doing all the things.
Yeah, she pulls out a panel. He's sitting there. She moves around some crystals. He's sitting there. She opens up a box. He's sitting there.
I took a rail trip once around the United States, even though it was broken up by, you know, stops in various towns of a few days. I still spent like 6 or 7 days total on a train. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, I was, you know, even with chances to get out and stretch your legs, I was still like climbing the walls. So I can't imagine like 10 days. I mean, I guess it's what people in submarines do, right? But still, it's nuts. Yeah.
Well, and that's this, you know, at least like on a train, you can get up and go to the lounge car, or the dining car or something. Mm-hmm. You know, on this, you had a very small area, basically two rooms.
Right.
Yeah. And did they show the cases of like shotguns and stuff on the cargo ship? Because obviously
they showed a bunch of stuff in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Before they got beamed across.
Yeah. Thor's learned to beam the weapons over with the SG beams now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just comes with it.
Yeah.
The important things.
That was a cool view, though, where the back end of the shuttle's getting ripped off and you see the black hole in the background as they get zapped off.
Yep.
Yeah and it's
the Deus Ex Machina there, literally. Yep. But
hey, Thor's a god, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I love that Thor's ship is named the Daniel Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've had the Jack O'Neill, right? And then now the Daniel Jackson.
Yep. And the Daniel Jackson isn't destroyed immediately.
Nope.
Like, you notice that's like the Asgard, like they're like, how do we deal with the problem? We'll self-destruct. You
know? Yeah.
Well, they're about to.
Yeah.
They're about to until the one replicator got it or shut down the ship.
Mm. Yep.
Well, I guess when you can clone your... you can clone yourself. You don't really value your physical body as much, so.
As long as they got your memory backup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then is it the real you? That's the question.
Mm. Are transporters murder devices?
Oh. Yeah. Yes, they are. Yeah.
Same and question.
Speaking of the real you, he's he's at Cheyenne Mountain now because we get Kalmnus Amaterasu. Yeah.
Yeah.
All show up. And basically, Baal has taken over a lot of Anubis's stuff, including the Kull Warriors, and is wiping them out. And so they've come to Earth to seek an alliance, but they're kind of going about it the wrong way. Here's where we kind of get to see Dr. Weir and Daniel Jackson doing their negotiations. You know, this talk of like bluffing and poker and stuff, and interesting goings ons.
Right, because they know that the Earth has those jellyfish weapons, and they were able to annihilate Anubis with that. But they don't know that Earth is not able to use them right now, and neither does Baal. So it's a lot of a lot of sleight of hand, and you know, just playing them that way.
I found it very interesting that Dr. Weir is supposed to be this amazing person, you know, helping make treaties, and yet she has no ability to bluff.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah. And she's always gotten by telling the truth in the past or something.
I thought, really? In international relations that you always tell the truth to get a treaty? But that doesn't seem to...
They were still naive and optimistic in 2004, I guess.
The world was different back then.
It was a much simpler place. But
I guess that gave us the opportunity for Daniel to lead a little bit. Otherwise, it would have just been her show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been nice to... I feel like because that's the character she's been put forward as, is this amazing diplomat, I feel like she... In the end, she does bring it in more, but I feel like for a lot of it, it's Daniel's kind of leading the show, which I guess makes sense because he has dealt with the Gould, but I feel like they could have given her more to do.
I do like his little primer on the Gould that he gives to her. You know, they're evil, they're beyond evil, you know, they, you know, and then she responds.
Can't be trusted for any reason, and
yeah. And she responds, sounds like the average day at the United Nations.
Yeah. Right, so you would think she'd have a little more experience.
And Daniel does tell her no you puns because they've been done to death.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was good. I like that they continued their, we'll call it camaraderie, or, you know, understanding that they had in the end of season 7.
Yeah. I think they're a good pairing because Jack is a bit too quippy, and I don't feel like her and Sam would really be on the same level, and then Teal'c doesn't say much. So if you need someone who's going to be talky and chatty, I feel like Daniel's probably the easiest one to work with.
And we get Steve Basic back as he was previously, I forget the name of his character, but a member of an SG team, and you know, major character on the later seasons of Andromeda. And apparently lives just a few doors down from Gary Jones, who plays Walter the Gate Technician.
Oh, that's funny.
It's like the one useful nugget I learned from the commentary is that Steve Basic had a trampoline in his front yard that the kids would play on. So
there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's the quality you get with the commentary.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was nice. And he seemed in the stuff written and, you know, that in the magazines about it, he seemed very excited to be, you know, back on the show and playing a Gould.
Nice. Speaking of actors in this, we see, you know, Colonel Lionel Pendergast.
Oh yeah.
On the Prometheus. Well, it was played by Barclay Hope, who was General Mansfield in Eureka.
That's right. He was. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you, yet another show I need to go back and watch, just binge, because it's so binge worthy.
It does hold up pretty well. Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. We've watched some episodes recently with the kids, like the Christmas episode with Chris Parnell as Chris Kringle, and it holds up really well still.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. But we do get to see more of Lionel Pendergast over the next season and a half or so.
Nice. And then back on the Asgard ship, we see that the Thor is showing them how the replicators are all going to get sucked into the black hole that he created with the sun. And of course, that does not go to plan, and they start moving away somehow.
Yep. They happen to figure out how to turn the time dilation machine into basically an anti-gravity device. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, Carter is so fascinated, right?
Yeah.
She's like, oh. And Thor is like, how did they do that?
And they come out of there with this big, pretty cool ship design. I like the the way they were, like the aesthetic of the replicators. It's like all little Lego bricks, basically. And they fire a weapon into the Asgard ship, and it's not like a destructive weapon. It's to just sabotage the ship.
Actually, yeah, I love that you're expecting this, you know, big explosion or whatever, you know, brace for impact, and it's kind of like a oomph.
Yeah.
Where's the kaboom?
You know, kind of like if you're on a boat and you just, you know, a little bit stronger wave hits you, it's just kind of like, oh, okay. You know, no big deal.
We get them, they go down to the engine room to hunt down the replicators that are crawling everywhere. And I noticed that in that, like, that hallway that Sam and Teal'c go into, it's got, it looks like cooler, like the insulation you'd put on like a cooler, or like the windshield thing you put up.
Yep.
Yeah. And do you know why? It's because they were shooting on the set for Blade Trinity, the third Blade movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They got it after that. And the Blade people were like, yeah, just, you can use the set. Just make it sure it doesn't look like it looks in the movie. And so I think they stuck like foil up and some other things just to make it not look like the set.
Thermal blankets or whatever. Yeah. The emergency Trinity. Thermal blankets, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad it was put to good use in this episode then. And then we get Sam gets beamed out by the replicators and they take off.
Yeah. So. But I think we even, before the end of part one, we do get to see Patrick Curry as Fifth, who we last saw as in Space Race and the Unas episode, Enemy Mine.
And he's mad.
Oh, yeah. He's very mad.
Which justifiable, but
if you think about it, we talked about that in that episode. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the episode, but that we talked about how they use his humanity against him and how they turned on him, and he figured that out.
Yeah,
He figured out real quick and figured out that he can get revenge.
Yes, another very human element.
Yeah,
and then Sam's like, "I was just following orders."
I didn't want to, I promise.
Yeah.
Which is what anyone would say in that position.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm totally with him on the fact that he doesn't trust her, but then he decides to start playing like Nine Inch Nails music videos into her forehead, and
that was weird. It was like they went to Halloween USA and got like the spooky DVD or something that you're supposed to put on the TV.
I thought that looked like a Doctor Who flashback scene or something like that. I mean, I think I've seen some of those videos before.
Yeah.
I was thinking, why did they do that? And then I thought it must have been just save time and money, just because they go, you know, into more, but like they didn't film torture scenes, which I'm thankful they didn't film actual torture scenes with her. But yeah, it just was like, okay. That was really bad.
Let's use some clip art to
see if you can withstand watching something spooky.
Yeah. There's an episode of Voyager where Tuvok is like having some kind of mental like breakdown thing with him being like telepathically attacked, and they show like these really violent torture scenes, and it's like scenes they cut out of Event Horizon and just like spliced in and edited.
Is it slightly. Really?
Yeah. Like they just took this like the torture hell scenes from Event Horizon and dropped them in that episode. And I guess they had to like crop them so they would be okay for television. I thought that was interesting.
Was that the Brad Dourif episode, or was that a different one? I think that might have been a different one.
No, it was a different one.
Okay. So, I'd watch the Brad Dourif episode again because that's a good one. But
that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's angry. He's torturing her, and he has the... I really like how he played the character, because he has humanity, but he has the emotional bandwidth of like a 5-year-old, which would make sense from his character. Yeah. It comes across as really creepy.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. And I liked him. This is weird. I liked his character better this time than the first time. Because the first time he kind of came off as like this goofy, I don't know, just like puppy dog. You know, I'm going to follow you around. And I'm going to, you know.
Clingy and...
Yeah. And this time, I don't know, I feel like you understood his character a little better, right?
I mean, it could also be his character grew, you know, yeah. Betrayal will do that to you.
And that's it, something about time, and he says, well, I had a lot of time or whatever.
A lot of time to think about it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no right? other positive influences or human mm-hmm. influences even to mellow him out, so now he's just megalomaniacal.
Mm-hmm.
Until she starts crying, yeah. And then he...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he like then starts he stroking her hair. That
he's
was
like,
creepy.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going about this the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I guess we can just roll into that part with she wakes up in this nice
after farm. The ship has crashed because yeah, the Asgard yep. yeah. blow up the replicator ship. Part of it lands on the planet, which is like, uh-oh, because we've got all this like unobtainium on our planet. And if they're replicators eat that, they'll be able to, because that's what they need to create more human form replicators.
Well, yep. What are the Asgard thinking?
Yeah. I like the way they go about it. Like the ship warps into the planet and then all these Asgard ships blow it up. And then Thor's like, well, when we blew up the ship, it broke into a bunch of little pieces and they landed on the planet. It's like, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly.
You just created a bunch of tiny little problems.
Yeah. And Fifth uses that as his opportunity to create a dreamscape for Samantha yeah. Carter. Not like I guess you can tell he's like kind of distracted, you know, because he has to keep thinking about what the other replicators mm-hmm. are doing and stuff. But it just seems like timing, like you could wait, you know, until you conquered the planet first. But
yeah,
he's in love, apparently.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think the first episode kind of ends with us going, was Carter alive? Is she not? Did she blow mm-hmm. up with the ship? Like, what happened to her?
Yeah, Thor kind of does a whelp face to Teal'c, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second half, she wakes up in dream world, like nightmare world.
Yeah. Oh, no. Montana. She wakes up in Montana, well, where absolutely nothing strange happens.
Yeah. That part's lovely.
Nothing weird's there.
Yeah, it was a nice house.
Yeah. She got long hair. There.
That's true. And the dog. Didn't the dog look like Richard Dean Anderson's dog in the episode where they went to Buzz Kinsey's party?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the dog was part of the farm. That I did get off the commentary. It was actually like the actual farmhouse they shot in.
Oh, the farm dog. That's funny.
And I think it actually was the dog from the farm. And okay. Yeah, and I think Andy Makita got to be the guy with the treats kind of wrangling the dog.
Yeah, because you see the dog look over for a second. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, wait, there's something over there I want.
Yeah, because she walks that way. And usually if it's your dog, it would follow you. And it doesn't. It goes the other direction.
Yeah.
Well, we can headcanon that Fifth doesn't understand how a dog would work because he's never read it.
There
dog,
you go. So.
It's not a perfect simulation. It's also not a perfect simulation because it has Pete in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, but we get to, I mean, pretty good Pete scene. Like, he's like, oh, gosh. Yeah, you had your mind, your distress, the broken stuff, and I'm trying to help you. And then he goes from that to, like, throwing a pot of scrambled eggs
across the room. Like abusive Pete.
Yeah.
So we have stalker Pete, and we have abusive Pete.
Yeah.
In Pete's defense, this isn't real Pete.
Yeah.
But how real is Pete anyways?
I just love that he created a world with, like, she's supposed to be, you know, like, ran off with Pete to live this idyllic, you know, farm life. And she's like, no, there's something wrong with this.
There's no way I would want that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's not techie enough. It's not geeky enough. I'm not interested.
It's not idyllic because Pete's here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that she sees through it pretty quickly and we're not like, you know, is this going to be like another 40 minutes of Sisko not realizing he's not really in the 1950s or whatever. You
know? Yeah.
But
yeah, I appreciate it.
I was going to say it's not a William Shatner riding around on a horse.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
In the Nexus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This was weird alternate dreamscape done right because they don't, mm-hmm. keep leading you on with it. She's suspicious from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of wavers a little bit, but she's like, no, this really isn't real. Yeah.
And he even kisses her.
You. Oh, that kissy stuff. I don't like that on my Stargate show, and they better not show one of their main actors or actresses naked is all I got to say.
Heat or it was Fifth. Either way.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a double whammy there.
Yeah. We do get that cool scene where like Pete's walking forward and then morphs kind of into Fifth and stuff. So I thought that was.
It is funny though. I just saw the new Dune movie and Fifth and Timothée Chalamet in that movie. They have like a very similar look and style. So that was funny to see. Like, yeah. Skinny guy with black frizzy hair.
It's back.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Yeah. But yeah, we get the Asgard. Thor is able to return to Earth, and I love that whole sequence because he beams up Daniel right in the middle of him talking to Elizabeth Weir, and Daniel just takes it in stride. He's like, "Oh, hey guys."
Yeah,
yeah.
And we didn't mention that, you know, Ball was going to send a ship.
Yeah.
To attack Earth to test them. And so the system lords that were on Earth wanted a ship to come to Earth and attack. And so they were going to leave the planet. They weren't able to, but it didn't matter because Ball destroyed the planet anyways, or destroyed the ship anyways on the way there. So that threat's gone. So now we can focus on the Asgard.
But even before that, where Dr. Weir tells them, yeah, we'll give you what you want, but you have to give us Ball's territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were all like, what? She's like, isn't that how it works? If I kill the Ghoul, then I get his stuff.
We did it. Not you. We did it.
But I liked that. I thought that was really gutsy of her. So it helps us going forward just to know that she's got that in her personality.
Now, if that worked out, if Earth did that, how much territory would Earth have by this point? All of Anubis, how many other system lords they've killed?
I don't think we'd have to worry about the system lords.
No.
I was going to say, I want to see an alternate timeline where Elizabeth Weir becomes the Empress of the Universe and like rules over the Tauri
Empire. Tauri Empire. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But one of the whole reasons the system lords are there is because, you know, they recognize that the Asgard haven't been seen in a while, and that while Earth may have a secret weapon, the 26 or 27 other planets in the Protected Planets Treaty don't, which represents, you know, millions of human beings that the Asgard once protected, but now can't protect. And so it's really cool that as the system lords are kind of there arguing, all of a sudden the Asgard finally do show up and start beaming people, you know, away.
Yeah.
Well, I like that too, because I think Daniel goes, well, what about Jack? Whomp, and there he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Thor was already in the process of beaming him up when he said it.
Yeah.
And then we get because Jack is still frozen because of the ancient memories implanted in him. Thor interfaces his brain into the computer, and I just love that whole sequence.
That
Hello,
amazing.
Jack.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. They say on the commentary how much of that was ad-libbed for Richard Dean Anderson, because I can just imagine he just did all of that.
Yeah, so. some of that was, there's another ad-libbed line coming up later. But yeah, a lot of that was ad-libbed. They only had like, I think, a day or a day and a half with Richard Dean Anderson to shoot. So anytime you see like Teal'c and Daniel Jackson or Thor reacting, that was filmed later, like on a completely different day and stuff. Yeah. And so if they're reacting around the case, you know, the case that Jack's in, it's actually a photo double. It's a person who looks kind of like Richard Dean Anderson in most of the cases and stuff. So
that's cool.
Well, you could tell too that they're just like, okay, we don't need to do the recap. So he's like, so the plan is, oh, I know, I heard.
Yeah.
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 Right. Okay. That works.
it was in the ship's log. I know it.
And then they say something like, oh, good thing he's not speaking ancient anymore. They're like, and what does Thor say? Like, oh, no, ship's translating.
It's translating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how they just worked around all of these things just quickly, get it out of the way. Okay, move on.
Now we'll suck it all out of his brain and get him awake and give him guns. And,
and
everybody's
he's all
happy.
Back to normal. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but not... I was going to say, he builds us, it looks like some kind of weapon from Halo, which, considering the fact that Halo copied weapons from Stargate, took inspiration for that, it comes full circle, I guess. But he creates something that he doesn't know what it does before they dump the repository from his brain.
Yep.
But they get to test it soon enough because their plan is to kidnap a human form replicator and kind of use him as like a camera to see what's going on.
They use him as for a man in the middle attack on the replicator's network.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically sneak in and they're able to see Sam trapped in the replicator Legos.
And the guy they get is actually the stunt coordinator for Atlantis. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
The actor who they beam up is nice. The guy who does the stunts for Stargate Atlantis. And so from there, they're able to see that Sam is, they do the zoom in enhance on the replicator vision, and they get to see that Sam is on the planet somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which they don't ever, I don't know if they explain this and you can just infer that the ship was blown up in large enough chunks that chunk survived, but
yeah,
like how did that work out? They don't really talk about that.
I assume Fifth created a real quick little anti-explosion room and
maybe that spider chamber thing.
He's a master builder from the Lego movie. He's just like throwing Lego bricks together and like all around him as they're falling. It would have been cool to see that, like, but it would have ruined the suspense because we know Sam's not dead, but.
Yep.
Hey, yeah. But then the replicator wakes up and they start shooting at him, which of course does nothing until Jack grabs the thing and turns him into dust.
It's like, oh, look, it
Terminator.
Works.
Yeah.
But don't you want to slap the Asgard? Like, seriously, you just beamed him on your ship. Do you not know what he can do? You can't. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, and then you try, oh, we'll just beam him out. How'd that work for you? It didn't.
Actually, it worked out pretty well because they got to see Thor's like, oh, now I see how this works. Now we can do a, you know, planet-wide version of it.
The Asgard are book smart, not street smart.
Yeah.
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 I just think they create their own problems sometimes.
Well, just remember the episode where they blow up the Jack O'Neill and he says something like, we can't think, basically paraphrasing, we can't think that dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, I do like the part, this is going back a bit, but when Thor says that he's interfacing Jack's brain into the Daniel Jackson. And Daniel like stops mid-sentence and she's like, what? Yeah. And then he has to explain to him that
he doesn't even say the Daniel Jackson. He just says into Daniel Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had some really, I didn't look to see who wrote this one, but they had some just really good lines and moments, you know, as they're all interacting, which just made it all, just so much fun to watch.
It was Malazzi and Mully and Robert C. Cooper, I think.
Okay.
You know, they're credited, Malazzi and Mully are credited for the first part, Robert C. Cooper for the second part, but I think all three of them are, Malazzi and Mully wrote the first, you know, pass, and then Robert C. Cooper probably, you know, did some other stuff there.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of good line delivery, and I think that Daniel Jackson is utilized better in this episode than he has been in a long time. Like he does very well in the diplomat role, especially against the Gould.
Yep.
And it's nice to see him have more people to play off of.
Yeah.
Well, we almost get to see the whole team together until the very end, or almost very end.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because we have the big assault on the replicator spider ship, which looks very, very cool.
That was cool.
Like, yeah. They did, like all I the said,
replicators,
they, yeah.
replicators are running away from the Asgard super weapon, and they make this big giant spider that just leaps off the ground and takes off.
It curls up its legs. We even get to see the big mama replicators, too, that we don't usually get to see running along and stuff.
And then they try to rescue Sam, and Fifth threatens to kill her.
Yeah, and but she's able to convince him that if he really loves her, then he'll let her go, which I think that's a line from a song, probably.
Yeah, Sting. Yeah.
If you really love someone, create a robot double of them.
Yeah.
Right, so she gets picked back up by the team, and they return to Earth, and that's when... we see that Elizabeth Weir is packing her bags because She's going to go off to do the Antarctica expedition, which will lead into Atlantis. And we get Brigadier General Jack O'Neill is now in charge of the SGC.
Yep. It's one star. And we find out that Hammond is now in charge of what they call Homeland Command or Homeland
Homeworld.
Security.
But Homeworld.
Homeworld Security Command.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he gets in charge of.
Yeah.
Gets promoted. Doesn't, I don't think it says that he got another star out of it, but at least he got promoted to a higher position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was, you know, just after, this was just a few years after, you know, the Patriot Act and all that, where Homeland Security was created, mm-hmm. you know, and Tom Ridge and mm-hmm. all that and stuff. So it was like probably a lot funnier than that. Yeah. It was called Homeworld Security.
Well, she even says that wasn't like the official name. That's just what they started calling it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get this
Space
Force. You get this great team dynamic of them doing pros and cons to it. O'Neill being the man.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple of them where it's like, I think that's
sticking
a con.
It to the man. Yeah.
He does have a desk, though, which he didn't realize.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. I've never had a desk. And Carter's like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
You actually do.
That would have been funny if they would have had like this one room. They showed this one room where he walked into this one room and there's this desk with about, you know, 7 years worth of dust sitting on top of it.
All the memos.
Yeah, memos he never read. But of course, the biggest pro is that he gets to do whatever he wants.
Yep. Exactly.
And the first order of business is to promote Sam, from major mm-hmm. to lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's there and clapping. Yeah.
Yep. So we did end with team. Like we didn't get a lot of team to start, but we ended with team. And we're going to savor those team moments as much as we can, season 8.
Yep.
Because they're going to be kind of few and far between.
Mm. Yeah. Although, I don't know. I feel like if it's difficult to write new stories that aren't just rehashes of old plots for the whole team, this is the best way to utilize them, where you get different characters, get big parts in chunks rather than three of them have a plot and then one doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone was utilized really well, I felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we get Sam's, she's taking her oath, which I like how Jack leads with I insert name.
Yeah.
Just leaves that in there, which sounds like an ad-lib. Experience.
That's how they do it.
Nice. And we get the scene on the replicator ship. I guess this is what they would call like a post-credit scene nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
With Fifth making his replicator robot version of Sam, who appears to be covered in honey.
Ew.
Ecto slime from
slime left over from Nickelodeon.
His own little Sam Barbie doll.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Fun.
Creepy.
Yep. Yeah.
Very creepy.
But yeah, this is a really good close to season 7 and then this, like, just all flowing together. I've really enjoyed it. I think these are some of the best episodes so far.
You can tell how well the team running the show, how well they clicked.
Yeah.
And they had all these stories. They're just like, okay, all the things we thought about that we haven't done, let's just, why not? Why don't we try it all?
Yeah. Awesome. Did y'all have any other thoughts on this episode?
I did kind of have a chuckle when they were, you know, they're doing their promotion ceremony right in front of the Stargate. What would have happened right then if there was a dial-in?
They'd close the iris.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of pictures. Like, you can't take pictures and, like, look, I was promoted. Here I am with my commanding officer. What are you standing in front of? Well, no.
Yeah. Coming close, all you see are the flags.
Yeah.
Just erase it in Photoshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Google's magic eraser can solve that now.
Yeah. Yep.
I will say season 8 has some really, I mean, as much grief as I give it all, it has some really good episodes. And so I'm excited for them. And there's just to go back to the Sam Jack ship thing. So there's actually kind of a resolution to their ship, and that they're going to, even though we have Pete, there's going to be a focus on it. So they give us more ship than before.
Yep.
Is that a good way to say it?
And sure. now that we're doing Atlantis too, I have almost 10 weeks until I have to watch Avatar again. The episode Avatar, not the.
I was going to say Avatar: Last Bender is great. Oh, yeah.
No, not Avatar. The what is it? Sixth episode of this.
Okay, so there's some not great episodes too.
Yeah.
Nice. Did we have any alternate language?
Yeah, we did. We did in French, and I didn't know this was a word, but it's a word in French apparently. The title is mésalliance or mésalliance, which is misalliance.
Yeah, nice.
So misalliance could be a word, I guess.
I like that.
And then in German we get neue Machtverhältnisse, which is new power relations.
Oh.
I have a feeling there's a reason why they didn't want to use New Order.
Yeah.
I have
a
very strong feeling there's a reason. Yeah.
Something to do with history, you know.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Secrets of Stargate. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Stargate and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And be sure to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and you can find our video versions at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. To find previous episodes of Secrets of Stargate and to send feedback, you can visit sqpn.com/Stargate. And you can email us at stargate@sqpn.com and follow StarQuest on social media at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia or on Twitter at sqpn. And we'll be back next time when we jump into Stargate Atlantis. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yes.
Until then, Father Corey, thank you for joining me in sharing the secret to Stargate.
Thank you, Jack.
And Lisa Jones, thank you as well.
Thanks, Jack.
And Victor Lambs, thank you, too.
Thanks, Jack, and who's your daddy?
I guess I could say you.
You. Yeah. That was the line that Richard Dean Anderson ad-libbed.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Seems perfect.
Once again, I'm Jack Berezini. Thank you for listening to The Secret to Stargate on StarQuest.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that just happens to be how I feel about it. What do you think?
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. Let's Science. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/science.